Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're taking a really close look at something we hear about constantly: economic development.
Right.
It's everywhere. News, policy debates, you name it. But often what it really means, especially how we measure it, gets a bit fuzzy.
It does.
We've gathered a whole stack of your sources on this. And our mission, well, it's the same as always. Cut through that complexity. Pull out the key insights.
Mm-hmm.
Think of it as your shortcut to getting properly informed on this really vital topic. Okay, let's unpack this fascinating deep dive into economic development.
It is fascinating, isn't it? Because what's often missed is just how multi-layered this whole idea of development is. It's really so much more than just the money side of things.
Yeah.
And we'll get into how some of the usual ways we measure it can actually be, well, surprisingly misleading sometimes. Why looking deeper gives you a much richer picture.
That's a really good point. Because, yeah, when we talk economic development, it's not just about how fast the economy grows, is it?
Mm.
It's about the quality of that growth. What does it actually mean for people's lives? And it's interesting that countries aren't just, boxed in by how wealthy they are. There are different ways to think about their development journey.
Yeah.
So how do we even start classifying these economies?
Well, one basic way is classifying them by their level of development. So right at the top, you've got your developed economies.
Okay.
These are typically places with, genuinely high standards of living, really solid infrastructure, think good roads, reliable power, and very diverse economies, lots of industry, lots of services.
Right.
High literacy, people live longer, high incomes, the ones? The US, UK, Germany, Japan, those kinds of places.
So those are the ones that have sort of made it in economic terms. What about the ones still, changing fast?
Right. Next, you have the developing economies. These are countries really in transition, often moving away from farming towards more industry and services.
Mm-hmm.
Income per person is usually moderate, maybe low. But crucially, you see things improving: health, education, infrastructure. It's all getting better. And a key thing here is what's called the dual economy.
Mm-hmm.
You might have a really modern tech sector, say, existing right alongside very traditional farming villages.
Ah, that contrast.
Exactly. Think India, Vietnam, Brazil. Classic examples of that mix.
And then the other end of that spectrum, where the challenges are maybe the greatest.
Yeah, that's where we find the underdeveloped economies. Unfortunately, these are countries dealing with very low levels of income, education, health, pretty much across the board.
Right.
Lots of poverty, not enough jobs, or people working jobs that don't really support them. Often heavily reliant on just basic farming to survive.
Hmm.
And sadly, you often see political instability, weak institutions, which makes it incredibly tough to make progress. Places like Chad, Haiti, Afghanistan often fall into this group.
That gives us a good feel for the different stages. But let's talk hard numbers. How do bodies like the World Bank classify countries just based on, their income? I know there's a system for that.
Oh, absolutely. The most common system for classification by level of national income is definitely the World Bank's. They use gross national income, GNI, per person.
GNI?
Yeah, GNI per capita, measured in U.S. dollars, and they update the thresholds each year. So you've got low-income economies, that's GNI per capita, of $1,135 or less.
Okay, lowest bracket.
Then lower middle income economies, they're between $1,136 and $4,465.
All right.
Moving up, upper middle income economies are from $4,466 up to $13,845.
Right.
And then finally, high income economies, that's $13,846 or more per person per year.
So these numbers, these brackets, they're not just for show, right?
Yeah.
What's the real world impact of being classified like this? Why do these specific thresholds matter?
Oh, they matter a lot. Because these classifications directly influence really big decisions globally.
Like what?
How international loans are given out, how foreign aid gets allocated, even the kind of development plans that international groups and countries themselves focus on.
Yeah.
So basically, which income group a country is in affects the resources and support it can get. It really connects back to its pathway for future development, you see.
Fascinating. Okay, so we have these categories. But the million-dollar question, literally, is how do we actually measure all this, this complex idea of development? When we talk indicators of living standards and economic development, what are we actually looking at?
Yeah, that's the core challenge, isn't it? We often start with the ones that seem most straightforward. The monetary indicators.
Right, the money ones.
Exactly. The big one everyone knows is GDP per capita, gross domestic product.
Mm-hmm.
That's the total value of everything produced inside a country divided by the number of people. gives you a kind of average income.
Kind of a snapshot of the whole economy's size per person.
Right. It shows overall activity. But the big limitation, it tells you nothing about how that money is spread around.
Right.
Or about valuable stuff that doesn't have a price tag, like volunteering.
So GDP is useful, but it misses things. What about GNI, which you mentioned for the classifications? How's that different?
Good question. GNI per capita, gross national income, starts with GDP, but then adds in the net income residents get from outside the country.
Ah, like money sent home.
Exactly. Remittances are a big part of it for some countries. Or profits from investments abroad. So GNI gives a better sense of the actual income available to the people living there.
Okay, that makes sense.
And then you can go one step further to NNI per capita, net national income. This is GNI minus depreciation.
Depreciation, like wear and tear.
Precisely. Wear and tear on the country's capital roads needing repair, machines wearing out. So NNI tries to show a more sustainable income level, accounting for what you need to reinvest just to maintain things.
And there's one more really key money adjustment, especially for comparing countries, isn't there? Something about buying power.
Absolutely crucial. Purchasing power parity, or PPP. This is a huge deal.
Why is that?
Because it adjusts for the difference in the cost of living. Just comparing, say, income in U.S. dollars doesn't tell you much about what people can actually buy.
Right, like a dollar goes way further in some places than others.
Exactly. Your $100 might buy you a lot more food, housing, transport in one country compared to another. PPP tries to level the playing field, comparing what incomes can actually purchase in terms of real goods and services, gives a much more meaningful comparison of living standards.
Okay, that helps. But here's where it gets really interesting for me. These money figures, useful as they are, they just don't paint the full picture, do they? They have some pretty big blind spots.
Oh, absolutely. The issues with monetary indicators are, well, they're significant. For a start, they often completely ignore environmental damage.
How so?
Well, imagine a country cuts down all its forests for timber exports. GDP goes up. But is that sustainable development? The cost to the environment, the future, isn't counted.
Right. It misses the ecological cost.
Totally. And they often miss the huge informal economies, street vendors, unregistered businesses, massive in many places. Plus, inequality. A high average income can hide huge gaps between rich and poor.
Yeah, the average doesn't tell you about the distribution.
Not at all.
Yeah.
And then simple things like currency exchange rates bouncing around can make comparisons look weird. Ultimately, a high GDP per capita doesn't automatically mean people are healthy or educated or safe or, you know, happy. It just doesn't capture the full quality of life.
So if just counting the money isn't enough, isn't the whole story, what else should we be looking at to get that more complete, more human picture of development?
That's exactly where the non-monetary indicators are just essential. They capture those broader aspects of life, the quality stuff.
Like what sort of things?
Well, things like life expectancy at birth tells you so much about general health, nutrition, basic conditions.
Makes sense.
Infant mortality rate, too, a really sensitive indicator of healthcare access, especially for mothers and babies. Then there's access to education literacy rates, how many kids are actually in school.
Okay, health and education, definitely key.
Absolutely, and basic access to healthcare itself, but also clean water and sanitation, these fundamental things. And increasingly, people recognize things like gender equality and real employment opportunities are critical indicators of a society's overall well-being and fairness.
It feels much more grounded in people's actual experiences. But okay, can you bundle these together, combine the money side and this quality of life side into one number? That's what composite indicators try to do, right?
Precisely. Composite indicators try to give you that more holistic snapshot by combining different factors. The most famous one is probably the Human Development Index, the HDI.
Yes, the HDI. You hear about that one a lot.
You do. It's from the UN Development Program, UNDP. And it cleverly combines three main things.
Which are?
Okay, first, a long and healthy life measured by life expectancy. Second, knowledge measured by years of schooling people have had and what they can expect. And third, a decent standard of living using GNI per capita, but crucially adjusted for that purchasing power parity we talked about.
Right, the PPP adjustment.
Yeah. And the HDI score runs from 0, which is low human development, up to 1, which is very high. It gives a broader sense of progress than just income.
Are there other ones that look at slightly different angles? Maybe things like, I don't know, poverty or well-being in a different way?
Yes, definitely. There's something called the measure of economic welfare. MUW, it tries to adjust GDP by adding positive things usually missed, like the value of leisure time or unpaid work.
Okay.
And importantly, subtracting negatives like pollution costs, and also trying to account for inequality. So it aims for welfare, not just production.
Interesting. Gets closer to actual well-being, maybe.
That's the idea. And then there's the Multidimensional Poverty Index, MPI. This one's also from the UN with Oxford University. It focuses specifically on measuring acute poverty, like severe deprivation.
How does it do that? Not just income again?
No, not just income. It looks at deprivations across three dimensions. Health, using child mortality and nutrition data. Education, using years of schooling and attendance. And living standards, looking at access to basic things like electricity, clean water, decent flooring, safe cooking fuel, owning basic assets.
Wow, that's specific.
It is, and a household is considered MPI poor if they're deprived in at least one third of those indicators. It gives a much richer picture of poverty beyond just not having enough money.
Okay, here's a concept that always makes me think. The relationship between growth and, well, fairness. The Kuznets curve. What's the story with that?
Ah, the Kuznets curve. It's this really interesting theoretical idea about how income inequality changes as an economy develops.
Okay.
It suggests this inverted U-shape. Picture it. In the early stages of development, maybe as industry starts and people move to cities, inequality tends to go up.
Why is that?
Well, the idea is that the new industries create wealth for a smaller group initially, and the gap between the, say, factory workers and farmers might widen.
Okay, so inequality rises first.
Right. But then, the theory goes, once the country reaches a certain average income level, inequality starts to fall.
And why would it fall?
Things like governments bringing in more redistributive policies like progressive taxes, maybe more spending on education for everyone, social safety nets getting stronger, that kind of thing.
So it gets worse before it gets better is the idea.
That's the classic Kuznets curve theory. But it's important to stress, it's a theory, a model. Real life is often much messier, and not every country follows that neat path. Some get stuck with high inequality, others manage it better from the start.
Right, a useful idea, but not a guaranteed path. So we've got this amazing toolkit now, GDP, GNI, PPP, HCI, MPI,
yeah.
Non-monetary stuff, even this Kuznets idea.
Mm-hmm.
How do we actually use all this? How do we apply these measures to understand progress, say, comparing growth and living standards, either in one country over time, or between different countries?
Yeah, that's really where it all comes together. Let's take comparison over time within the same country first. So if GDP is going up, that usually signals growth. But to really know if living standards are improving for the average person, you need to dig deeper.
How so?
Well, first, adjust for inflation, right? You need real GDP growth. Then adjust for population growth. Is GDP per person actually rising?
Right, per capita.
Exactly. Then think about inequality. Is the growth benefiting everyone, or just a few at the top? And back to the earlier point, is it environmentally sustainable?
So growth needs to be real, per person, shared, and sustainable to count as real progress.
That's pretty much it. The crucial thing is that economic growth has to translate into tangible improvements in people's actual lives. Better health, more education, decent housing, feeling included in society. If it doesn't do that, it's just numbers going up.
Makes total sense. And what about comparing between different countries? How do these measures stop us from drawing the wrong conclusions?
Well, for comparison between countries, just looking at GDP per capita in dollars can be really, really misleading, like we said, with the cost of living differences.
Right, the PPP adjustment is key there.
Absolutely vital. And that's why broader measures like the HDI are so valuable for comparing countries. They give you a much more realistic picture.
Because income isn't everything.
Exactly. You could have two countries with pretty similar GNI per capita, right?
Mm-hmm.
But one might have way better health outcomes or higher school enrollment or more personal freedoms than the other. The income figure alone doesn't show you that.
Mm.
And this really gets you thinking about why some countries develop faster or better than others. It's usually a complex mix, isn't it? Things like adopting new technology, how much they invest in education or roads, how effective their government and policies are, whether they're open to trade. It's a whole puzzle.
Yeah, definitely not just one single factor.
So really, to wrap things up, the big takeaway is that economic development is just so much bigger than income growth. It's about deep changes in the economy's structure, yes, but also fundamentally about people's well-being, their capabilities, and doing it all in a way that doesn't wreck the planet for the future. So while those money numbers, GDP, GNI, they're important starting points, we absolutely have to look broader. Use tools like the HDI, maybe MUW, definitely the MPI, to really understand if genuine human-centered progress is happening.
thinking about all this, what does it mean for you listening? Well, understanding both sides, the money side and the human side of development, helps you make sense of policy debates, understand why aid goes where it does, and grasp why building prosperity that includes everyone and lasts is so important.
Mm-hmm.
So given everything we've unpacked today about what development really means, here's something to think about. What do you think is the single most overlooked factor when countries try to measure their success? And why is getting that factor right so crucial for truly fair, equitable progress across the globe?